Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the host or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stanner.
And a happy Saturday morning. Welcome to another hour of enlightenment here. Every Saturday from 9 to 10, you'll find Rick and myself, Carrie Black, here with the Conservative Thought Hour. Rick Stanard is a political activist and doing so many good things for the conservative cause. Good morning, my friend.
Hello, Carrie. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm really excited about our guest this hour. Our guest is Sherrese Trump, executive director from Speech First. And before joining Speech First, she worked at the Heritage Foundation as the associate director of coalition relations, focusing on defense policy, foreign policy, and immigration reform issues. Previously, Sherrese worked at the Alexander Hamilton Society as the program manager. While at AHS, she managed their national network of university and professional chapters, which focused on bringing speakers to campus to debate professors on foreign policy issues. How cool. She also ran the annual AHS conferences and fellowships, mentored the alumni, and developed young professional programs in Washington, D.C. Over the past year, Sherrese has participated in a number of fellowships while also leading and moderating many debates and discussions on key policy issues. Trump is a 2018 George C. Marshall Fellow of the Heritage Foundation, a 2017 Claremont Institute Publicist Fellow, and has participated in numerous fellowships hosted by the Herdog Foundation. Sherrese completed her Master's in Security Studies at Georgetown University's Walsh School of Foreign Service, where she was a 2019 Donald Rumsfeld Graduate Fellow. And she also has a BA in Government and International Politics from George Mason University. She joins us this morning. And Sherrese, inquiring minds want to know, are you related to former President Trump?
I am not, but I will say that it has made the past few years very interesting.
I bet it has.
Well, you know, with any luck, he'll hear you and say, I need to adopt this girl.
Right, exactly. No, yeah, we could probably go that route.
Well, Sherrese, obviously, the First Amendment is important. It's, you know, the right to freedom of expression. And it's foundational to everything else we do. Where does your organization, Speech First, fit into today's battle for the freedom of expression?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's really great to be here. And yeah, thank you for reading my entire bio. It's like my whole history of my life flashing before me as you were reading it off. But it reminded me of kind of like why I got into, you know, working on First Amendment issues and free speech issues, right? Because I worked a lot with college students in the past, but I was primarily focusing on national security and foreign policy issues. And so what drew me more towards the free expression, free speech problems that I'm seeing in America was just the understanding and like seeing what's going on the campuses and seeing that students are just not participating in debates. In fact, debates aren't even really taking place generally in the public square at all. And the only time you ever see anyone disagree is every now and then on the news or during campaign debates. And so students and, you know, various other young folks are not becoming practiced in how to discuss politics and how to discuss, you know, political philosophy and the way they want to run the country. And so that's kind of where, you know, I found Speech First. You know, this is an organization that had started a few years before I came on. And, you know, as an organization, we represent our members on college campuses in lawsuits against those universities that violate their free speech rights. So we focus primarily on policies that are on the campuses that are chilling student speech and creating scenarios where students start to self-censor. They're actually afraid to speak up because they know there are certain policies on the campuses that will punish them or discipline them if they express an opinion that seems to be unpopular or might offend someone. And so that creates an environment where students are essentially walking on eggshells all the time. And I saw that a lot in my work at Hamilton Society when we were trying to work with student chapters, bringing speakers to campus. And then I also saw it a lot with my work at Heritage with Young Professionals. So it's something that is very pervasive in this country. I'm sure you guys have all seen on the news, it's getting much, much worse with what's going on campuses, with student protests, shutting down speakers, not recognizing conservative organizations, and then also professor biases as well. So it's something that, you know, is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, my professional career has kind of always touched on it and been exposed to it. And that's why I got into working with Speech First. And that's kind of the background of what we do. I'm happy to go more into also some of the policies that we do see that actually chill student speech.
Well, absolutely. Tell us.
Yeah.
You know, we want to know about Speech First. I want my listeners to go to your website and follow you guys.
Yeah, you can find more information on us at speechfirst.org. You can sign up to become a member as well, so you get regular email updates and our newsletters. Furthermore, we always encourage students to sign up as a member and share their stories on our website and let us know what's going on their campuses so that we can kind of have an ear to the ground. You know, we don't have student chapters. We have student members who keep us informed. So it's really important that we always have, you know, that resource available to us. But the lawsuits that we've been mostly involved in since 2018, which is when we were founded, focus primarily on some of these policies, two major ones. One is bias response teams, and I'll get into that here in a minute, and discriminatory harassment policies. Now, in addition to those, oftentimes our lawsuits will encompass, you know, flyering restrictions, which were, you know, our rules on campuses that restrict students' ability to hand out flyers, or they have to get it pre-approved, which, you know, at a public university, this is a constitutionally protected right, that students are allowed to disseminate information that they, you know, of their whatever they want to express or ideas that they might have. This is not something that universities, especially again, like taxpayer funded institutions, are not allowed to be prohibiting this. Another another policy that we always see on campuses are, you know, talking restrictions or what they call free speech zones, right? So you can only exercise your right to free speech in this one quartered off zone on the campus that the university is dictate. You know, that's obviously, America's a free speech zone, right? Like, this is obviously very unconstitutional. It always blows my mind when I see stuff like this, because I'm like, you know, hold on a second. How did they even get this past their lawyers? You know, how did the university even get something like this approved? And I think the answer is they don't actually, you know, tell anyone about it. They just implement these policies and hope no one notices that they're actually unconstitutional. But back on bias response teams, a big part of that is that these are essentially cross-departmental teams of administrators, right? So it's oftentimes these teams include DEI staff, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion staff. It'll include oftentimes the dean of students, sometimes campus police officers, other times campus counselors. And what these teams are essentially designed to do is to solicit reports, anonymous reports, from students on one another on such things that are what are referred to as bias incidents, right? Or unwanted speech, offensive speech. Sometimes the university will go as far as listing a bias incident as a political affiliation. So if someone offends your political affiliation, then you can actually be anonymously reported to a team of administrators that have disciplinary capabilities on the campus. And so this is a really big deal, because once students get reported, they know that they're being watched by other students, and they know there's nothing they can do about it, and there's going to be some sort of permanent record on them. And again, like I said, it can lead to disciplinary measures against them.
Well, how did our universities get to be such amazingly terrible places? I mean, for an entity that is supposed to encourage thinking and free thought,
That's a great question, because it is kind of counterintuitive to what the principle of the university is, right? The foundation of what the university is it's supposed to be free thought, open inquiry, right? You're supposed to be able to inquire and test your thoughts against other ideas and see, you know, kind of what comes out in the end, what conclusions you're able to come to. And that's, you know, how you develop your intellect. That's how you become educated over time. And so, what we're seeing is that The preference for growing someone's intellect is actually getting set aside. And what's more preferred these days is just winning the argument, right? So if winning the argument is something that is doable by just calling someone a bigot or a racist, and then you shut them down, and it doesn't really matter if you learned anything from that conversation or if you actually even defended your position properly, it's just that you won. So, and that's becoming a more preferred, and again, like it kind of, to me, in the back of my mind, I'm like, this just kind of reminds me of how lazy millennials are and Gen Zs are, right? Because like we're getting to the point where we'd rather just use one word to win an argument rather than actually prove our point. Because that requires work, that requires research. And you actually, that also requires you to sometimes be more humble and admit when you're wrong and actually go do the work to figure out how to sharpen your argument. Again, that's a heavier lift on students. And you're asking them to do things when they just came up through a society that was quite decadent, you know, the society there. They have everything at their fingertips. They can stream whatever show they want for as long as they want. They can, food will show up at their door. Groceries will show up at their door. They can order something, any kind of item online, and it will show up within hours or then immediately the next day. This is a very spoiled and decadent society. And so when you're asking them, no, you should actually want to do work, or you should actually want to go through the painstaking process of intellectual development, this is something that is very hostile towards them. They don't want to do that because they know there's an easier way.
Well, it just seems really strange because if it had been the conservative side at the university campuses that had begun the cancel culture and no, you can't talk to us about socialism, no, you can't talk to us about gender, and no, you can't, they'd be screaming bloody murder.
Right. And we should remind ourselves where, you know, the biggest free speech advocates in this country historically were on the left. You know, if you look back at the civil rights movement or the anti-Vietnam War protesters, I mean, this was they exercised their free speech rights very much so back in the day. All of a sudden now that the message is not in line with what they believe, all of a sudden now they don't like free speech anymore and they want to shut it down. I mean, we saw this, we see this with Elon Musk buying Twitter, where with their reactions to that, because they know that he's going to encourage types of speech that they disagree with. So they're incredibly hostile towards the concept of free speech now. And we are seeing an increased hostility towards this concept of free speech. I was looking, you know, I think I saw it on Twitter or something. There was some signs that people took pictures of at Colorado State University and Indiana, I think it was the University of Indiana, and they had signs that basically said, warning, free speech event ahead. Beware. You might have to engage someone who's exercising their free speech, as if it was a bad thing. It's not, they weren't saying hate speech and they weren't saying unwanted speech. They were using the term free speech to describe a very negative incident. And I think by attaching that kind of that negative connotation to the concept of free speech, we're immediately now making it something that's evil and unwanted. So when we, you know, that, I mean, when you look at the Constitution and, you know, students are trying to defend their rights, and the counter argument is, well, now it doesn't really matter what your rights are because your rights are evil inherently. So now you can't have the right to free speech anymore because it offends people. And so that's kind of the narrative we're seeing a lot of administrators take on.
Well, I'd love to offend some people, but they wouldn't pay any attention to me, I don't think. You recently had a very successful little escapade down in Florida, and you mounted legal action against the University of Central Florida. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we had a great win in the 11th Circuit against the University of Central Florida. That was our third major win at the circuit level. We previously won in the 5th and 6th Circuits against University of Michigan and the University of Texas, Austin. And it was a 3-0 unanimous decision. And basically, they stated that we have, so the whole case essentially was on the school's bias response team, which they renamed to be called Just Knights response teams. A lot of these bias response teams or bias reporting systems go by various different names on campuses, so they're hard to identify and hard for students to know about them until they actually get reported. So UCF had a bias response team that was actively used in the language describing what could be reported as bias. I mean, it listed anything from like a offensive, unwanted speech, or unwanted annoyances. It used very broad and undefined terms, very subjective terms, and students were reporting on each other left and right, just on basic things that offended one another. And, you know, again, there was a disciplinary process in place to happen once a student was reported. They would get an email. The email would say, hey, you've been reported to the bias response team. Students know what this means. And then the email will say, you need to come into the dean of students' office and you need to, talk to us about what's going on here. And the student isn't told what they said or what they did because they need to come in to talk to them about it. And they're also not told who reported them because it's anonymous. So they don't even know what the situation is that they were reported on. It's technically supposed to be an optional meeting, but it doesn't really ever specify that in the email. And so if you're a 19-year-old, right, you're just going to assume that what the university says goes, and that, you know, it must all be legal, right? So the student goes into the office, and then the next step is to essentially let them know they've been reported for an incident and that they either can do mandated diversity training, or they could possibly write a letter of an apology or go see a counselor. They give all these disciplinary actions items to them, and it's terrifying for a student because you're like, wait a second, is this going to affect my permanent record? Is this something that I'm required to go to diversity training now, which is essentially some sort of like indoctrination camp. If you think about it, it's like, oh, you've been reported, so now you're going to go get some diversity training. You know, we're going to put you in this room and you're going to have to learn about all of our viewpoints, our way of looking at things. So
yeah, re-education center.
Right, exactly. The re-education center, absolutely. And so that's really terrifying for students. And another, a couple other policies on UCF's campus, one that we were very successful at, we actually won at the district level in the beginning, was their computer network or their computer use policy, which essentially put restrictions on what students could email to one another. Again, public institution, taxpayer funded, you cannot put restrictions. This one's like pretty basic, which is why we won it earlier on in the lawsuit. Like, you cannot put restrictions on people's emails, like what languages are allowed to use in their emails. That is just not something that goes in this country, right? So in addition to that, UCF also had a very hostile to free speech harassment policy. And what we see a lot of universities do is they'll have like their Title IX sexual harassment policy, but then, which will usually follow federal regulations, kind of sometimes, not always, but then they'll always have like a secondary harassment policy, and they usually call it the discriminatory harassment policy. And they will define discriminatory harassment as basically anything that's unwanted, or like stereotyping, or maybe even list out things like offensive jokes or microaggressions, right? So again, this is another situation where students have literally no idea what they're allowed to say or do, because it's just, you know, the terminology is so broad and it targets speech so much, they can be reported for even having mainstream views. So to answer your question, the UCF case, we took that up to the 11th Circuit, and we recently won it. And, you know, it's a big win for us and for, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, which are all in the 11th Circuit. That precedent will be set, and hopefully the mandate will come down probably in about a month or so to the school. And, you know, this is, like I said, the third win on our part for the circuit level, and we're really looking forward to eventually getting a case like this up to the Supreme Court.
That sounds like I wish I could get a notification of your existence to every incoming freshman that they knew they had a resource when they're being picked upon.
Yeah, and that's what we tell students, you know your rights, and if you feel like anything's in question, always reach out to organizations like ours, speechfirst.org. Again, tell us your story. You can email us directly and let us know that there's incidents on campus that you want to make sure we're aware of. But, you know, we've done a lot of research on like kind of these freshman orientation materials, right? We are going to be coming out with a report here soon on, we sent freedom of information requests out to a bunch of universities and across the country to see what kind of materials they're actually handing out to students. What kind of environment are they characterizing for students when they come on campus? And we found that it's 700% more emphasis on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and transgender stuff, and like what you how you should treat each other, and what you can say to one another. But 700% more of that kind of information of controlling speech and limiting speech versus the amount of information they actually provide on your constitutional rights, your First Amendment rights, or just encouraging open discourse, even just the basic concept of saying, hey, you're on a university campus, you should be able to have free flowing discussions that help you educate yourself and discover new ideas. They barely ever talk about that in freshman orientation. And that's what we found through this research.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, we have to take a break for our sponsors to get a word in, but we will be right back with Charisse Trump and Speech First. And stick with us, my friends. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back, everyone, to the Conservative Thought Hour. And our guest today is Charisse Trump, and she is Executive Director of Speech First, which protects our students in schools. And is that universities only, or do you get down to grade schools?
Yeah. So we are focused on higher education only. And our litigation, our lawsuits are obviously going to be against public universities, but we do have various initiatives where we try to put pressure on private universities to also encourage free speech on their campuses.
Well, I have to tell you, I went to school at the University of Michigan, and I was very proud of that. But I'm not quite so proud of them now as I was when I was a student. They're doing some pretty strange things in Ann Arbor. What have you found about that school?
Yeah, University of Michigan was one of our earlier lawsuits, and we won against them in the Sixth Circuit. And I mean, I'll tell you, so they had a bias response team at the time, and, you know, we settled with them after we won in the circuit level because and they actually dismantled their bias response team because of our lawsuit. But, you know, even since then, I still see incidents all the time in the news about University of Michigan just the other day. And it's, you know, sometimes it's from the administrators. Other times it's from their student government association trying to pressure the administrators, like the woke mob, you know. And this is something that we always see on campuses. A lot of the times the administrators are just bowing down to this woke mob movement, right? This, you need to outlaw all of this like free speech, or outlaw all this speech on campus so that students can't offend us because we are so easily offended. And that is something that we see so regularly, is that, and you saw it at Georgetown as well, where you get clubs and organizations and student government associations putting all this pressure on administrators to essentially tamp down on speech on the campus. And the administrators give in, and then they create these policies that are unconstitutional. And University of Michigan was one of them. But I've seen them even to this day, the students are still pressuring them to put more and more restrictions. I know they had issues with recognizing Jewish clubs on campus and, you know, trying to force, say, Jewish organizations and students to participate in the BDS movement. And that's because this is the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. And this is because, you know, the Student Government Association wanted to pressure the campus into participating in that movement. This is a political movement, right? So this is not something that, you know, it kind of goes against the concept of neutrality, which is what you would expect a state actor like the University of Michigan to be playing at that time, not to have viewpoint discrimination and having issues with biasness against one specific side, which essentially was conservatives a lot of the time. So yeah, Michigan, you know, it's unfortunate because they are such a great school. They're so highly ranked, but they do run into a lot of free speech issues these days.
Well, it's so sad to me because when I was in school there, which was, you know, 1960s, there was an enormous population of Jewish students. It's startling to me now that there's anything going anti-Israel in Ann Arbor. It just is shocking to me.
Right. But this is something that's been going rampant on campuses. I see it. It's across the country, this movement against this anti-Semitic movements all over campuses. And I think that is something that, and again, I think this speaks to the type of environment that the campus has been lending itself to, which is this shutting down of unwanted speech, right? This, we need to win the argument, we need to beat the other side concept, this mindset is taking over college universities. And so what's happening is the students are really just kind of feeding into that, and they're starting to, it's not like the administrators or the faculty are taking these opportunities to teach students, you know, hey, by the way, I know that you're really passionate about this issue, but we're not going to restrict your fellow students' speech because it's against their constitutional rights. They never do that. They never take a moment to teach students about their constitutional rights or about the laws or any of that. And, you know, part of it in my mind is maybe it's because they don't want students to know their rights because it's easier to control students and manipulate them with these policies that violate their rights. And so it's in the university's interest to maintain that hold, that stronghold over students. But at the same time, I think, you know, I think they're just afraid to, they're afraid to go to resist the mob. They're afraid that, you know, someone's going to lambast them on social media and that the university is going to end up in the news because they didn't bow down or toe the line for the far left movement. But what ends up happening is they end up in the news anyway, because we come in and sue them for violating the students' rights. And, you know, then they have to pay millions of dollars to for in legal fees to defend themselves, and we go public with it and it's all over the media. So they're not really helping themselves by, you know, by violating students' rights in the hopes that it will appease the mob.
Well, their behavior is much like what we're seeing from certain blue state cities like Chicago and San Francisco and Seattle. Mm-hmm. They allow things to happen because it's easier than standing up for what's right. And by allowing these things to happen, they're destroying their lives and everyone else's. So,
yeah.
You know, if administrators would just at the beginning say to their students, listen, you know, we teach you how to think, use that and win the argument. Don't come to us crying.
Right. And that seems like such a simple, straightforward concept. Like, why aren't administrators doing this? And I think, you know, a lot of it, like we said, I think they are genuinely afraid of getting accused of being, you know, racist or bigoted or whatever the woke mob's going to call them if they don't stand up for their issues. But I also think that it's there's no one putting pressure on them to go the other direction, right? To be pro free speech, to be pro the Constitution. There's not a lot of pressure from that side. You know, we can litigate against universities, but there's only so much strength that we have. We need, you know, we'd help from alumni and from donors to reach out to their universities and their alma maters that they give to and say, hey, I want to know if you guys actually have a free speech policy. I want to know if you talk to your students about it, if you educate your students on their legal rights. And if they don't have that, you know, it's the onus is on a lot of the folks who provide funds to these schools too, and say, you know, if you don't have this free speech policy, I'm going to stop giving you money until you get one. And so it does, the pressure needs to be applied, because right now the only one really applying pressure is on the left. And then our lawsuits do apply quite a bit of pressure, because we go, like I said, we go public, we go to the media. You can go to speechfirst.org and look up all the media hits that we have on the universities, look up all of our lawsuits and what we talk about. But at the same time, you know, that's only one aspect of what needs to be done. You know, call your state legislators, call your congressmen, and tell them that there's issues going on campuses in your state that you're worried about, and you want it to be, you know, you want something to happen on the legislative side even. And this is not, you know, there are plenty of laws that could easily be put in place with regards to mandating teaching of the Constitution in school orientations, but also, you know, mandating that universities have policies that are pro-free speech, and that they sign some the Chicago principles, for example, which outline a whole list of free speech, free expression on campus principles. So this is something that, you know, it's not a heavy lift. I think it would be a pretty bipartisan issue, something that they all, that most of the universities would be able to recognize is also something that they should be doing. It's just a matter of getting that extra pressure on them, right?
They have to know that the moneyed people want it, because otherwise there's no emphasis for them to do anything.
Yeah,
if they can live life without doing something, they're probably going to be happier.
Exactly. Right. No, you're absolutely right. And so on the money side, like I said, reach out, or, you know, if you're an alumni or if you're a donor to a university, definitely push on them, you know, definitely send them letters, reach out to the university president and see what they're doing on their campus for free speech. Feel free to reach out to me as well. Like I said, you can email info@speechfirst.org, or just reach out to us via our website, speechfirst.org, and let you know, ask me to help you reach out to these universities. I'm happy to draft a letter for you if you feel that there's a policy that needs to be discussed with the president of the school that you give to. So that's something that we have been trying to do, especially with private universities, which are much more difficult to sue because they're not as beholden to the Constitution as public universities are. But again, it comes to the taxpayer-funded stuff, right? If you're a state legislator, if you're at the federal levels of government, there are policies to put in place that will withhold funding unless these universities, you know, toe the free speech line, right?
Yep, absolutely. And on that note, we have to take our second break of the day. So everyone, come on back with us in just a few minutes with Cherise Strump from Speech First, and we'll continue our discussion on what's going on in our schools. All right. You have an alumni donor program that you began talking to us about, Cherise. Is there anything else you want to tell us about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is, you know, this is a newer effort on our part, but we're starting to see this trend increase, right, with other organizations as well. I think we're all recognizing at this point that, you know, money plays a really, really big role in institutional decision making, right? So universities are very much beholden to the dollar, and they will respond in kind when, you know, if there's enough pressure put on them. And now that comes back down to how much pressure is applied, right? So yeah, if you're a $100 donor and you're an alumnus and you give $100 every year to your alma mater, that's great. You know, keep sending them messages and really put pressure on them. But also find out who else is in your class, you know, who also gives to the university. Let's like rally around with one another and try to get everyone to put pressure on the school. Start a Facebook page, start some sort of social media trend. What we've been doing on our end is petitioning universities, trying to contact the alumni of all the universities that we see free speech violations at, and letting them know that we're petitioning them. We're going to send a letter for them to the university. And we've been getting thousands of signatures for various schools, so against Georgetown University, against Tulane, for Washington and Lee. You know, and it's actually, you know, it has put pressure on the schools, but I think, you know, it's, the petition can do one thing, but I think, you know, putting financial pressure on them, threatening to withhold funds is a big one. And, you know, you saw it go with Washington and Lee University when they were threatening to take the Lee name out of the school's title. The Board of Trustees got involved because so many donors were upset by it and they had to put a stop to it. And so this is definitely effective. You just need to make sure you get enough numbers to do so. So yeah, like I said, if you have a university that you give to that that you think has some serious problems, definitely reach out to us.
Well, that's great. Everyone should pay attention to this. It's speechfirst.org, and contact them if you have any needs of their services. One of the things that's difficult is that free speech is like nailing jelly to a tree because it changes. You know, the First Amendment actually protects us and our ability to have freedom of expression from the government stopping it. But that's different than, for instance, an employer. You know, if you went into an employer and you said to the employer, you're dumb, you'd probably get fired. If you went into a university and said the same thing to your professor, you wouldn't be kicked out of school, but you have a right to say that. And you don't have that right to say the same thing in a different environment. And that makes free speech a very difficult topic to really get your head around sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, the United States has a very unique free speech stance and free speech laws. Our Constitution, even in all Western civilizations, our Constitution is the most liberal, small L liberal, when it comes to free speech rights, right? We say that Congress shall make no law abridging the right to free speech of the press, right? That's what our First Amendment says. And there's no exceptions written in there, right? So if you go to any other country in the world, they oftentimes do have exceptions. Even in Western countries, they'll say, you know, every man has the right to free speech, except for when it's unbecoming, or if it's offensive, or if it's, you know, something that is denigrating towards another individual. So a lot of countries do write exceptions into free speech in their constitutions. And so I think it's something that we need to recognize, and students need to recognize as well, that this is very unique. The United States is uniquely freer than of every other country in the world. And this is something that it's almost as if they are rejecting that, because they know that if they allow this open discourse, then they might be proven wrong. Again, I think a lot of it comes back down to the fact that whether or not they actually want to engage with one another, right? This is something that I always try to educate students on. You know, again, know your rights, because administrators take advantage of the fact that students are signing these contracts with them, and they're not reading the student handbook. They're not reading the policies on their campus. They're not doing their research before they go to this campus, but they're agreeing to pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars and dedicate, you know, 4 years of their life to this institution. But they still don't read the fine print. They don't even read the normal sized print. So again, it's up to students are adults. They need to be doing their research on these types of things. They need to know what their rights are. And, you know, we've talked about this a little earlier with looking at K through 12. Of course, there's a serious issue in this country with the civics education, right? So you get a lot of students who probably by the time they get to college have never read the Constitution, have never read the First Amendment. They don't actually know what it says. And they certainly don't know the laws around it with Supreme Court precedents. So this is, again, I really do say that a lot of the onus is on students to do the research and do the work and know their rights. Because if you're not learning it in K through 12, universities manipulate you. They take advantage of that.
Well, one of the frightening things of the effort to contain free speech that is that it's on school campuses now, but what's on school campuses now will make its way into general life once these mm-hmm. students graduate and get into general life.
Yeah,
you know, bias reporting systems.
Yeah.
Are frightening. That's teaching us to rat on our friends.
Right. That is an excellent point, because you're right. Bias reporting systems are like something out of East Germany during the post-World War II East Germany. And that's where you had neighbors reporting neighbors for anything that seems suspicious. You had family members reporting onto their family members. And this is very similar to what's happening on the campuses. These bias reporting systems are so accessible, and again, so utilized by the students to just tattle on each other constantly. They will report one another for various things, even just for, you can be reported for just standing next to someone who makes an offensive statement and not speaking up. So the amount of students who are getting reported, and for the various reasons they're getting reported, is very scary and very disconcerting, because you're right, what happens on campus does not stay on campus. And if everyone's looking around and they see this cancel culture environment that we now operate in, where do you think that started? That started on the college campuses, where students were starting to cancel one another. They were starting to shut each other down, and the universities encouraged it. And now you've seen it bleed out into various other elements of our life. And this is, again, these students are going to graduate at one point, and they are going to either go to law school, and they're going to have incidents like we saw at Yale Law School, where they shut down speakers they disagree with. They're going to be future lawyers, future judges, future Supreme Court justices, right? And they're also going to be future national security advisors, or possibly a lot of them will be working in the tech industry. They're going to be running and writing algorithms. We wonder why there's all this censorship online, because you have millennials, and eventually you'll have Gen Zs running these corporations that are controlling all of the information flow in this country. And if they are raised up through an environment where it is totally okay and actually encouraged to censor one another whenever they don't like an opinion or an idea, then what makes you think they're going to stop enjoying that lifestyle, stop wanting that lifestyle when they graduate school? They're going to replicate that in their everyday life.
Well, what's really a concern to me is that we are one of the few countries that's doing this. If I look at education in other parts of the world, which I do, I don't see all of this. I see people being taught to stand up on their own two feet and express themselves and win arguments properly. And we're raising a bunch of kids who can't win an argument. They can't even formulate the points in an argument properly.
Yeah, a report came out last year that said 80% of students admit to self-censorship at one point or another on campus, whether it's in the classroom or on the main campus in a debate. That's really concerning because you're right. They're not just learning how to shut each other down with one word by just saying, "Nope, I disagree with you. You're a hateful bigot, so I'm done with you," and winning the argument that way. And they're also just not engaging each other anymore because one, they're afraid of being accused of one of these bias incidents. They're afraid of being reported for some sort of discriminatory harassment for merely expressing a viewpoint. But they're also just less interested in dealing with whatever controversy might come along with having to engage with someone. And that is something that we're seeing an increase, especially with Gen Z. A statistic came out not too long ago saying that Gen Z right now are the most moderate of all the generations at this point in their lives than any previous generation before. And they're identifying as independents more than ever before. They're identifying as moderates and not wanting to pick a side. And to me, it's people do see that as, oh, maybe they're more open-minded. I see that as they're afraid to take a side. They are afraid to take a stance on anything. They haven't even developed convictions. And they're adults at this point, right? They haven't developed convictions because they haven't engaged with anyone to actually see what their ideas are or to test out their original thoughts. And so with this self-censorship environment, what's happening is we're going to have a future of leaders who are there either very complacent and keep their heads down and don't engage and they're afraid to speak up and express themselves. Or the other side, the flip side, will have other leaders in this country who are very bent on using whatever means necessary to shut down the other, whether that be some totalitarian tactic or despotic tactics. That's going to be what's next. And so I think we need to really recognize the fact that we are not raising decent future leaders really in either end of the spectrum, whether they're complacent and keeping their head down and just trying to go along and get out of school in 4 years, or whether they're just like these over, they're like over totalitarian, like they're trying to like completely control the school's narrative by taking it over. And that's something that either of those are bad for the country, if you think about it.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, if we force people to restrain their speech and to censor themselves, what we're creating is a time bomb because that hasn't changed the way they think or feel. And if they're censoring themselves, then it's going to explode later. I think that what's really under attack is the freedom to think.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we you know, if you want to control somebody, you have to stop and control their thinking, not their speech.
Yeah, and it's not just, yeah. So when we talk about free speech, what we're really talking about is the freedom to reason, to come to reason with one another. I mean, you're having, in order to be, the type of political environment in the United States is very much part of our culture. Like we have this political culture, right, of coming to some coming going to the process of reasoning through ideas and processes in order to understand and seek out the best solutions to something. And so if you're not speaking up and you're not allowed to think freely, like you were saying, then you're not ever going to participate in this process of reasoning with one another. And reason is such a high point of knowledge that we really need to have access to in order for this country, especially the way that the United States was designed, in order for us to function properly. I can go on the bias reporting systems. We recently released a report just the last month on bias reporting systems across the country. And you can go to our website, speechfirst.org, and go to the bias reporting systems part of the page. And we have a map on there that shows you can click around on the states and it will highlight what state, what universities in your state have either, a bias reporting system or a bias response team and what that looks like. And it will link you to the page and you can read what kind of reports they solicit and how they process it. But I will tell you, out of 821 schools that we looked at, we're still looking at more so we can increase the coverage. 821 public and private universities, we found over 55% of them have bias reporting systems. So 454 had bias reporting systems. Nearly all of those were allowed for anonymous reporting. And 53% of the most expansive forms of those systems were housed in these diversity, equity, and inclusion departments. So I always say DEI, this diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives on campus, they are getting millions and millions of dollars funneled to those departments. And they are hiring staff, and they don't, I mean, what are they going to do with all that money, right? It's not a real department with a real purpose. Their goal is to shut down speech, right? To shut down bias incidents that they disagree with. And that's where a lot of these bias recording systems are housed. So I always explain DEI as Trojan horses when it comes to free speech. Like, they come in with these pretty language about making the environment on campus more inclusive and open, but really they're doing the exact opposite of that.
Well, you know, I can easily fantasize of how much fun it would be to work with you guys and enter one of these universities as a spy and set up situations and trip them up so that we can force their change, not wait for it to happen. That would be a lot of fun. I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, no, but that's why we rely so heavily on our student members on campus to tell us what's going on. They're the ones who are going to be exposed to these policies, right? And going after, on the litigation side, going after these schools' policies is the first big step to outlawing things like bias reporting systems. And, you know, just also putting the schools on notice that they're being watched, that the students are aware of their rights and they know that they're being violated. They're not just going to bend over and let the school do whatever they want with them, right? They're going to stand up for their rights. They're going to show that they have courage and that they're going to sue the universities. Now, granted, we do keep our students anonymous throughout the entire litigation process. So that's something that, you know, because a lot of professors who are very biased against conservative students or other their fellow students are willing to dox, you know, anyone who's going after the school, anyone who sues the school, they can get doxed. They can suffer some serious consequences on their grades. Obviously, the students still want to graduate with a degree, right? So, you know, it is tricky to navigate, but we do keep the students anonymous because they are our members. That kind of allows us to do that.
Well, we've got about a minute and a half left, and there's so much of what you guys do that we haven't even begun to explore. Tell us what you're doing in Title IX in a minute and a half.
If we have a minute and a half, I will say you can definitely find more information about us on our website, speechfirst.org. You can follow us on Twitter, speechfirst, or you can follow me on Twitter as well, Sharice Trump. But you can also listen to our podcast. It's called Well Said, and I interview folks in higher education. I interview students. I interview professors, but also policy professionals as well, or activists. And we talk about all the issues of higher ed plus free speech, but then how that connects more to like the greater culture in America, right? So we do tie a lot of these cultural issues and questions that are happening to what's going on with free speech on campuses. So that is a really great podcast. I encourage you guys to listen to it. You can find it on pretty much any podcast app, or you can also find it on our website. It's Well Said. The last thing you mentioned, Title IX. So obviously the Biden administration is going to be making some rule changes to what Title IX is. Title IX is, real quick, you know, what it's a policy or it's a regulation that the federal government has put in place through the Department of Education to put limitations on how to define harassment or sexual harassment, right? Now, that sexual harassment also includes any discrimination on the basis of sex. So this is something that universities all have to implement when they are defining sexual harassment on their campuses. Like I mentioned before, a lot of universities, they will manipulate the language in the federal standard. So there were some really good standards put in place in 2020. And I talk about it. You can find some news clips with me talking more detailed about it. But there were some really good standards that were put in by the Trump administration that made it very clear, very defined of what sexual harassment was, so that there was no question and it wasn't overstepping and violating students' free speech rights, right? Well, the Biden administration is probably going to remove those standards. They are probably going to completely get rid of it and go back and revert to actually what we had under the Obama administration. And if you remember, under the Obama administration, there was all sorts of issues with universities violating students' speech rights and due process rights when it came to harassment on campus. And so this is something that is seriously concerning, because we're about to open the floodgates once again to this to students' speech rights being violated because of this Title IX standard being removed. Now, I know, again, it's one of those policies that's really in the weeds in there, and it's like difficult to research because it's very boring to read about. But I encourage everyone to go to our website. We have a section on Title IX that explains it very clearly to you. You can go to the issue page and click on Title IX, and we break it all down there for you.
Well, Charisse, we've reached the end of our time today. This has been really a terrific chat. I appreciate your time this morning, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah. No, this is a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me on. No, it's a great show. So.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. This has been Charisse Trump, Executive Director of Speech First, and her job, as she sees it, is to protect our right to free speech.
You've been listening to another hour of the Conservative Thought Hour. American Endeavor is the parent company of the Conservative Thought Hour. We believe in the freedoms guaranteed by our Constitution. We understand that our constitutional rights are not given to us by any government, so they cannot be taken away from us by any government. They are natural rights that belong to all Americans. We believe that government is not the solution to our problems. It is the cause of our problems. And so we know that the best government for us is the smallest government possible. These two beliefs are the core of conservatism and American Endeavor. You can find out more about American Endeavor and our efforts to sustain conservatism by going to our website at www.AmericanEndeavorInc.com. That's AmericanEndeavorInc.com. There you can subscribe to and read all back issues of our free newsletter, The American. You can watch our video series, Reliving Our Past, a series of short 60-second videos about the people and events that have shaped America. And you can join us in our efforts to reclaim our country from those who want to destroy it. Once again, our website is www.AmericanEndeavorInc.com. And please like our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/AMENDINC. Come visit us, learn about our efforts to promote conservatism, and find out how you can join us.
Thank you for listening to the Conservative Thought Hour. Remember what Albert Einstein said: the world is a very dangerous place, not because of the evil men in it, but because of the good men who do nothing.